Good morning. It is Monday. This is the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here with you in the Kia studios. And some of you had a rough weekend, a rough sports weekend, and some of you had a great sports weekend. But it is Monday. Happy to be here with you guys and get the ball rolling. So how was the weekend other than sports?
Good. I went down to Lithonia on Saturday for the Dos Equis tailgate party down at Dudley's. Was a great time, man. Shout out to anybody that came down there and said what's up. Went down there and enjoyed some Dos Equis and hung out with a bunch of people that listened to us. And I told them, like I always do, thank you. And I'm sorry that you listen to us on a daily basis, because that's quite the task sometimes, man. But was awesome. And then got to actually ran into people having the same conversation down at the Benz yesterday. I was able to connect with them. So, yeah, I mean, rough watching the Tennessee-Bama game Saturday and then having to, endure what was Seattle against Atlanta as well. But, nonetheless, man, solid weekend, beautiful weather. I know a lot of people out there enjoying it. And here we are, man. Got to talk about it.
I just love the fact that I am at my point in my fandom with my college football team that when you beat Kentucky, you're like, yeah, boy, we beat them. Beat them good.
Yeah.
Really, really laid the wood. I mean, DJ Lagway looked great Saturday. There's a lot of hope in that program, I think. I'm not sure if Billy Napier – some people think Billy Napier is the one to lead in that hope. Georgia did not – they did – I don't even know the words.
It's all right. Keep it going.
They just didn't – they didn't let up. They
relentless.
Went out, they – I tell you what.
Need to bring back one more Wednesday.
It was relentless. It was very impressive. Very impressive. And I think that we forget that Kirby Smart teams, a lot like your guy, Nick Saban's teams, they get better. And they're
our intent was to come eat.
Okay, well you ate, Kirby. Also, Kirby Smart probably worded his complaining at post game about a controversial call. As well as you can do it without getting yourself fined.
I love that. He sounded like Bart Scott.
I feel like he called it out. I feel like he called, like, it was pretty but blatant. He didn't drop.
He did not do it in any way.
Yeah, he was a wordsmith.
He didn't say anything that could get him fined, is what he didn't do. He was not critical in any way while being extremely critical and being truthful. And I loved it. I thought that was as good as it gets, because it's a. And let's talk about it for a second. It was the worst. It was a terrible call on the field that was overturned the wrong way.
Yeah.
The whole situation was completely mishandled by the referees from the moment they threw the flag.
Yeah. I got that Kirby Smart sound that'll be coming up and mic'd up today. And I think that's a fun conversation for a number of different reasons, because I think it just literally depends on how you're looking at it. And, I'm watching going, oh my goodness. Like, I think Herb Street and Fowler in the booth thinking the same way. They're like, wow, just keep going. But it was a great Saturday of football. Like I said, unfortunately, that Bama came up short. But Florida, you're right. I thought DJ Lagway, I thought he looked good.
Jordan Ball, the freshman running back. That's my only fear if they were firing Napier this year, is that, what happens with the portal and the NIL, because this is too unstable.
I think it's a fear you have to have either way. I think it's a fear you have to have either way this day and age in college football, man. You don't ever know what that roster looks like from year to year. Some of them look at it and go, man, we're losing, or, he barely saved his job or whatever. They might be out anyways. I mean, look at ETN. It is what it is, unfortunately, at this point. So, we'll have to break all those games down forward and backward for sure. But crazy day in the NFL as well. I don't know if you guys noticed, but I think there was – four quarterbacks stepping in due to injury, and – three other backup quarterbacks for the first couple of weeks actually starting yesterday. That was kind of cool.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, yes, NFL in full swing, as it always is on Sunday. You mentioned some of the good games. One of the games that a team that is here in Atlanta did not fare so well in at home was the Falcons. They dropped their game to the Seahawks 34-14. The final score of that matchup.
Yeah, like, disappointing. Yesterday was disappointing. I'm just going to be blunt. Sitting there doing the game yesterday felt like everyone that walked into the building downed a bottle of Benadryl and sat in the stands It was flat. The atmosphere was flat. This, everything about yesterday was flat. And the Falcons played that way. Now, the Falcons need to – look, the team has to do stuff.
Why do you think that was?
Hell, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I don't know why the crowd was as hungover as the team looked. Maybe everybody was up watching Georgia beat Texas on Saturday night. I don't know. But the teams, you have to do something to get the fans fired up. I thought effort was there. I just felt like there was no – the energy was lacking. And it was one of those – and it's one of the – that, to me, the biggest issue of all of it was this team has overcome bad moments where, you know, penalties and such. They didn't overcome any of that yesterday. They killed themselves with penalties, and they couldn't overcome it. And then what happens is, I thought, Mike, is you started pressing a little bit, and when you press, you make bad throws, you know, you kind of overanalyze the play on defense and make a gamble that doesn't pay off. When you press, you lose in the NFL.
Yeah.
Well, here's Coach Raheem Morris with Dave Archer post-game on what this team can learn from the loss.
National Football League, right? Yeah. You know, you got to come out and you got to play every week, and you got to come out ready to go every week, and we were not ready to go, clearly.
Yeah, I think that it's just one of those things where he was trying to be guarded of his guys. I think that he's like, you know, and he mentioned it. I think he said, actually, they're a little bit flat yesterday. Some of the players kind of pushed back on that and were like, no, I mean, you know, it is what it is. We got to make plays. I think Jesse Bates kind of pushed back a little bit. I'm with you. The whole stadium was flat. The team was flat. It was very much like, hey, let's roll the ball out there and see if we can win the game, rather than opposed to, you know, just taking it to them, hitting them in the chin to kind of start the game off with. And I get it. And we mentioned this a number of times, and we talked about it in pregame. There is such thing as a rest deficit in terms of the NFL. When you talk about a team coming off a 10-game rest period where they have kind of that mini bye week coming off Thursday Night Football, they should probably most of the time have more energy. But I didn't think so much that it was Seattle with a ton of energy. I thought it was Atlanta just not having any and getting punched in the mouth early. And then once you tried to scratch and claw back into it, you get the penalties start rolling. A couple, inability to make some of the third down stops, I thought was really the death knell.
Well, I know you said the team had kind of pushed back against feeling flat, but Raheem Morris did say it at halftime, too, and watching that game. When he came back out, he said, we need to wake up.
Yeah.
So but I guess he had a pulse on it from the get-go, maybe different opinions.
Hard to wake up in a sleep chamber, and that's what it felt like yesterday. I mean, it was just dead. It was just weird how business-like everything was yesterday in that game. And like, they had a couple penalties. I thought they had two or three that extended drives for Seattle, and Seattle made you pay.
Yeah, they did.
And Seattle tried to shoot themselves in the foot early in the game, and then they were able to overcome it. But I did agree with what Jesse Bates said. It was 10-7. You have a penalty that derails a drive, so you have to give the ball back, and then they go right down the field. And, you know, everybody's going to blame A.J. Terrell for the touchdown that Metcalf caught, but A.J. is playing with the technique where he feels like he has inside help, and you've got both safeties in the area, and they're not anywhere in the area, so yeah. I don't know where. So it's hard for me to blame A.J. Terrell with that when he kind of – the defense at zone that they're kind of playing, he kind of turns them loose like he's got inside help, and he didn't show up.
Was that the first time you'd ever seen DK Metcalf play in person?
No.
For me, it was. And I was very impressed with just looking down on the field, how I didn't even have to look for his number. You can pick him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's just looking down there going, oh, there he is.
It's a Julio-type presence.
It really is. Well, I was thinking like Calvin Johnson. Like Calvin Johnson, you could see from a mile away, very much in the same space that you would talk about like a Cam Newton as a quarterback. Like Calvin Johnson, you could just see from a mile away. I felt that DK is not quite Calvin Johnson size-wise, but, man, I don't know if it's just everybody else around him at the time or what it was, but you look down there and you see DK, and you're like, well, there he is. Hopefully we're able to find him on the field, and it didn't seem like at times we could.
Yeah, I've gotten to see him. That's the third time I think I've gotten to see him play in person. That's where it reminds me of, like, Julio. Is like it's just a machine. You know, it's not – You look down there and you're just like, holy man, that dude's built different.
Was there an energy issue with the players? We'll hear from the quarterback on the other side when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, the Falcons coming off a loss to the Seahawks at home 34-14. The discussion we were having earlier was whether or not there was an issue with the energy from the crowd to the players themselves. Let's hear from quarterback Kirk Cousins, who spoke with Dave Archer postgame.
Yeah, I think it's our job to bring the energy the way we play. And, you know, first series had the penalties, the pre-snap penalties that made it hard to overcome that and get the first down. And then the second drive, you know, I missed Ray on that third down. I thought we had a chance for a touchdown there. I threw it long, and that one loomed large as the game went on because we ended up missing the kick and then got a touchdown, and then had the 2-minute drive at the end of the half, didn't get anything. And so then we kicked it back to them, and they were able to go down and get points. So those four possessions, you know, we were close, and then we just didn't make the play we needed to make to come away with more points. And the second half felt like we were, you know, starting strong with a touchdown on the first drive, then got back down 10, and we were really right there, I still think, in the fourth quarter until the sack fumble, you know, on my part that I felt, you know, that started to kind of change the tone of the game.
Yeah, I think he kind of took the smart way right there of talking about that. You know, I think that's kind of the way you want him to talk about it. You don't want him to sit there and blame the fans and say, well, fans weren't really into it. They're sitting on their hands. Kind of takes the blame on his own shoulders, right? I should have made more plays. We should have awakened the crowd and everything else. And that's the attitude he's supposed to have, right? It doesn't matter if you're home, away, crowd asleep, nobody in the building, whatever it may be. You got to do the things necessary to go out and win the game. His focus can't be on the crowd. And truth be told, I don't know if the crowd had a ton to do with the outcome anyways. Like, it was flat, and I think it was disappointing a lot of different ways, but I can't sit here and say that if they would have been rowdy that the, you know, the game would have had any different outcome. It wasn't like, you know, other than the penalty-laden plays, it wasn't like third down was a massive thing or that you couldn't create havoc. And I guess you can't say either way, but it was what it was to me. It was just a sleepy atmosphere in there, and the team played like it.
Bijan Robinson did not play like it. He had a big day. Rushed for 21 times for 103 yards and a touchdown. He also caught three passes for 40 yards. So that was probably the lone bright spot in all of this for the team in that loss.
Yeah, it was the bright spot. I mean, he was our player of the game. He was our Solomon Brothers player of the game, actually. But Jean has brought it every week, though. Even the one game where he seemed to, like Tyler Allgeier, I think it was the Tampa game? Where Tyler kind of, I think it was Tampa where Tyler picked up a little bit. Maybe it was the New Orleans and Bijan, maybe like his hammy was a little banged up.
All I can remember from Tampa is the passing game. I don't remember either one of them running the ball because we passed so many times. 58 options.
Maybe that was, but then that's one. But even then he was active in the passing game. But every time he touched the ball yesterday, it was 7-8 yards, it felt like. And it was not the easy way. I can't tell you how many times, just on handoffs, he made guys miss in the backfield.
Yeah,
and he the catch he makes out on the perimeter, and when it was a little swing dump off, whatever you want to call it. First off, he has to snag it out of the sky, and then
that was something right there.
Take 1 foot forward, it felt like. Help a guy leave some laundry on the field, and then step it up. And he also took that little dump off. I think it was in the third quarter, and he ran it 26 yards, and he almost broke that one.
Yeah.
He was just phenomenal in every phase of the game yesterday, and including once again, he's the best pass pro running back I think in football.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt in my eyes, but you guys tell me if I'm wrong. Let both of y'all weigh in on this. I actually thought that yesterday was the best game that Bijan has had as a running back, like period. Not catching the ball out of the backfield. I know he's done that a number of times, created some explosives. But when you look at his actual runs, like you mentioned, making guys miss before the line of scrimmage, getting into the line of scrimmage, sticking your foot in the ground, breaking tackles, it's like obviously speed is a big deal for Bijan, but the use of acceleration is a bigger thing than speed probably for a guy like Bijan Robinson. I don't know. You guys tell me if I'm wrong. I thought yesterday was his best day as a running back since he has been with the Falcons. I thought it was incredible.
Well, it's his third straight 100-yard rushing game, so I would say that's probably pretty accurate right there to have that get that done this season for him.
It's a vision thing, I think. I think his vision has gotten so much better. I think early in last year, I felt like there were times where the patience – was just off with maybe what he was seeing, and I think it's all kind of slowed down for him.
I agree.
And I think you can see it. I think you see a lot of it just in his pass protection with how he can pick Not only, like, it's one thing in being physical enough to take on a blitzing linebacker or defensive end, but to me it's the other thing, the wherewithal, the vision, the knowledge of where they're coming to be able to step in and make that play. And he's gotten that, and I think you see it in his running, in him running the ball as well.
Yeah.
And just a quick note for you, that was his first time rushing for 105 yards since he did it back against the Jags, and that was back in 2023.
Yeah. I just think, and maybe I'm reading too much into this. Maybe I'm not. All right, but we talked about how the team was a little bit flat yesterday. You go back and look at the injury report last week that this team is putting out. And twice on that injury report is Bijan, limited participant, whatever, and it just says, like, rest. He looked like the guy that had been resting for a couple days last week. He looked so explosive, so energetic, so full of playmaking ability that when I look at that, and I'm watching him yesterday, and I'm going, he looks like the guy on the injury report that had that listed next to his name. He looks like he's got fresh legs.
I also think that it's part of the reason why we should stop trying to say that we don't need both and one's better than the other, is I think that you're seeing how they complement each other. Like last week, you were able to lean on Tyler at the end of the game, right? In that 4-minute offense moment, whatever you want to call it, where let's just grind this thing to it's over. Let's just grind it out and get this clock running. And Tyler was your guy, and that's what he really is good at. And then this week, Bijan is healthy. I mean, I say healthy, but like you said, fresh. He's got that extra burst in it. I mean, and he has the game. And next week, maybe it's there's nothing wrong with him rotating. But I can tell you something. He had another 100 yards. He's almost at 500 already for the season. And he added another touchdown. He's just playing well. And Drake London, say something, the chemistry between Drake London, Kirk talked about it in the clip that we played of Kirk with Arch. He talked about missing Ray Ray. And that one was that was a huge play in the game.
Yeah.
He doesn't ever miss Drake, it feels like. It just feels like and Drake is making catches that they are not easy at all. I mean, I'm telling you, he is the Tony Gonzalez to Matt Ryan.
I like that.
That is what he is.
I like that. My man, Tony G.
Because if there's nothing there, I know this guy can make the catch in traffic, contested. I know that the ball, his route's going to be sharp. This is a safe throw, even though it's not necessarily it's not necessarily a clean throw because it's going through all this traffic.
Quick correction, he had 103 yards again. But can we talk about the penalties, though, in this game? And then also the false starts that happened. That was what jumped out to me in the broadcast. I think they had three of them, and that doesn't happen at home.
Yeah, great. Jonathan Vilma, I'm sure, was probably the one on the call. No, I'm just kidding.
He
drives me nuts.
Again,
and I know he drives Falcons fans, but I think
but
to your
point.
But
9 penalties for 72 yards total. So
I think to your point,
I
think the false starts definitely jump out to you. I think Kyle Hinton had one after he enters the game for Matthew Bergeron, which was frustrating. But to me, it was all about the third down penalties, right? When you look at the penalties that you were getting off the field on third down, Nate Lamon had a hands to the face. Damon Harris with one of the more unfortunate roughing the passer penalties that I've ever seen. Literally just bumped into Arnold Ebiketie and fell down. So a couple of those were definitely unfortunate. There was an OPI, I believe, that brought things back at a certain time. And then there's one they picked up. I think it was on Julian Love that was supposed to be a pass interference. They just picked it up and said, it was incidental contact.
Which is garbage because...
ridiculous. Like every corner ever is like, man, I didn't mean to. It's incidental contact.
But the problem is that the only reason why those four players came together in that is because Mooney was held across the field. He was being held, running his route, and it bottlenecked everything, and then you have a four-car collision or player collision, whatever you want to call it, and it's just terrible. But I tell you what, Bill Vinovich was on one from the start because I have never heard. In fact, I don't think he's supposed to do what he did in the coin toss. Did you guys hear that?
Yes.
Where he's
yes.
like, he so the Falcons win the toss, they defer, and so the loser of the toss has to then, when a team defers, you have to say that you want the ball. If not, the Falcons will get the ball twice.
Yeah, he inserted himself.
Yeah, he goes, you want to take the ball.
You want to say yes.
And it's like, hey, man, you're not supposed to do that.
Keep your mouth shut, Bill.
Like, let him screw that up.
Shut up, Bill.
So he inserted himself very early into the game.
I agree,
man. And never, Never took himself
out of
it.
That was a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I wonder if you can complain about that to the league. Like, I wonder.
Maybe they'll put out a statement.
Yeah, like, yeah. We should, you know what?
Everybody throw my beer bottle.
Yeah, they should have thrown beer on the field. And maybe Vinovich could have changed it then. Who knows?
Well, throwing beer on the field, that brings me to the tease. We'll get you up to date on Georgia and Texas. What went down in Austin? Is this a statement win for the Dogs? We'll discuss next when we come back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
Nobody believed. Nobody gave us a chance. Your whole network doubted us. Nobody believed us. And then they tried to rob us with calls in this place. And these guys are so resilient. You know what I mean? We talked about intent. What was our intent when we walked on the field? Our intent was not to take pictures, not to do all the superstar stuff. Our intent,
hell yeah,
our intent was to eat. Our intent was to come eat and be hungry. I'm not interested in all the bells and whistles. What I want is a team that fights their ass off, and they did tonight.
That was Kirby Smart talking to ESPN's Katie George and calling out the network while talking to her as well. Georgia taking out the number one team in the land, 30-15 in Austin, Texas. So a lot of people, I'll say probably more than a lot of people, did not see this coming, including some of the people in this room.
Yeah. Nobody believed.
Well,
just the other two.
Did you pick Georgia?
I don't pick anybody, remember?
Okay, so
I'm neutral.
I feel like you're
right?
Talking trash, but yeah, you didn't pick either one.
I'm not, you know, I'm just neutral.
It felt like I was being I'll be upfront and honest about it. I didn't think Georgia's front seven could hit the gear that they hit Saturday night.
And they did.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point of me bringing it up is they did. They played like a very special unit. Honestly, I think that, and Georgia fans, I think, will agree with me on this. I think Carson Beck in the first half played very much like he did probably at the start of the Alabama game, where he's turned the ball over multiple times. There's miscommunications and such like that. But yet Texas couldn't capitalize on it because Georgia's front seven played so aggressively, so lights out, so matter of fact, so businesslike, that their front seven alone, their defensive line alone, vaulted them back towards the top of the standings. I thought they were absolutely incredible,
there
and hats
a total
off to Kirby Smart.
There were 7 sacks in this one. So,
yeah.
And I'd have to go look, but that probably is the most that they've had in a game this season, I would fair to say.
Yeah, I thought it was just an incredible job of coaching that front seven and making them play with their hair on fire. And, look, I liked Steve Sarkisian in this matchup. It didn't turn out the way I thought it would, though, man. Georgia Bulldogs came out and got done business-like mentality on the road in a tough environment for sure.
Well, remember when we were in here after the Georgia-Alabama game and we were all talking about, and I said that Kirby got out-coached by Kalen DeBoer. It was also the last time Kalen DeBoer out-coached anybody. But but the reality of the situation was Kirby went in there into Austin and gave Steve Sarkisian a masterclass on how to coach a championship-caliber team in a championship type atmosphere and game. He out-coached Sark, and Sark was panicky all night. I still don't understand what the hell I'm going to pull Quinn Ewers for Arch Manning.
You didn't like that? I thought you would have liked that.
Well, I think it was a panic move, and it didn't work out for him.
Because he took some shots. Quinn Ewers got that first blitz. Yeah. I mean, he got rocked, and then I think his leg got kind of banged up too later on. So I was wondering if it was, hey, even though he hung in there, but maybe they pulled him because of that, or they pulled him because they felt like they needed a spark and they felt like they could get it with Arch Manning.
Sark said that at halftime. He said, I wanted to calm him down a little bit and see if we could get a little something going.
Yeah.
And it didn't work because Arch Manning didn't fare any better than Quinn Ewers. And then, in fact, Quinn Ewers came back in and was able to get some footing a little bit in the game and they did close the gap. I just think you have to be, like you said, impressed with Georgia's front seven on defense. They were phenomenal. And even with some of the injuries that they're playing through, they were absolutely phenomenal. They outplayed Texas up front.
I think Texas got 3 NFL guys on their line, at least. And for Georgia to do what they did against them, pretty incredible. And hats off to them. I to go back to the Arch Manning thing, I kind of liked it that he did that because I think what it does, it gives you a plus one in the run game, adds a different dynamic as opposed to what Quinn Ewers is doing. And I think, honestly, too often do head coaches kind of sit on their hands when things aren't going well instead of trying to find a spark. Steve Sarkisian was like, I ain't going out like that, man. I'm going to try everything I got in my back pocket, put him in, then thought, you know what? That's probably not fair to do against this front seven with a guy that hasn't played a ton of football in games like that. So maybe I'll just take him back out.
Yeah.
That throw Texas off. And I mean, I know they were trailing. Georgia never trailed in this matchup. I know that both quarterbacks have played before, but this was kind of a little bit of back and forth.
Yeah, I think Georgia's front seven is what threw Texas off all night. And
I would agree
and
with
they've
that.
Got playmakers all over the place. You know, I'm over there sick to my stomach, the whole Isaiah Bond thing, just having to follow that saga of him not being at Bama anymore and having a lot of fun in Sarkisian's offense, though he's been banged up. So I don't know, man. I just think that the credit solely goes, in my opinion, to that front seven, that defensive line of Georgia that absolutely made it impossible for it felt like the Texas to do anything.
And what about the resiliency of Carson Beck? Because the early turnovers, what an interception, and still being able to bounce back from that. And help to lead this team.
Well, yeah. Carson Beck's got to calm down. He's got. I feel like there's a little bit of pressing early in these games.
The guy is playing a ton. He is a little jittery,
dude. They're not taking
three total interceptions on the day.
They're not taking the Lambeau back. All right, it's yours, dude. Just relax. I don't see the need to press. Like he's going out there trying to prove something at times. And just take what the defense gives you. And now that I think the defense, the way they played, should be some reassurance for like, hey, it's not all on you, man. Like, yeah, you don't have to. You
go
can
Brad Johnson on these dudes. Go Brad Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is. Go Brad Johnson on these guys.
Just relax. I like Carson. I think he's a smart dude. I think he's a good player. I just think he needs to calm down.
I do think, though, it's kind of to Tiffany's point. I feel like at times that I've thought, and you know, before this season and during the beginning of the season, that either one of these quarterbacks could have been like the first overall pick. I'm not sure I came into this game thinking either one of them would be the first overall pick. I'm not sure who actually is at this point. There's been a number of quarterbacks kind of thrown around, but
you're saying they faced an NFL front seven is what you're
saying. Yeah, I mean, like I just think that neither one of these quarterbacks looked like I would take him first overall in the draft. And you mentioned it, kind of hats off to Carson Beck for getting things kind of realigned and getting that offense moving in the right direction. But I think Georgia fans, and maybe y'all can correct me if I'm wrong on Twitter, but I feel like Georgia fans still have questions about the quarterback play at this point, but it was a gritty win by the defense that brought you home. And no shock, because it's Kirby Smart coach team, and that's what that man does.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This NFL draft this year is weak from what I'm hearing.
A quarterback, yeah.
Well, it's weak overall.
Yeah.
I was listening to someone the other day say there's probably only like 15 to 17 players that are actually worthy of a first-round grade. So my point is that I think these guys are going to go top five only because of the lack of talent throughout the rest of the draft.
Well, we saw from Georgia in this game what it takes to win a football game. You got to run the ball, and Travis Etienne, three touchdowns in this one, and then you got to play defense. So corner Dylan Everett coming up big time for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, We're going to talk later on in the show during Mic'd Up about the whole trash on the field, referees convening, the statement and everything
SEC.
Else. But, speaking of turnovers, like I said, just a light. I just thought that the physicality was just a notch higher for Georgia. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what that potion is for Kirby Smart. I've seen it firsthand. It's just an edge that he gets his guys to play with, and you hear him, backs against the wall. Nobody believed in us. Usually when Kirby says that, I'm like, you're a freaking liar, man. Y'all are Georgia. This weekend, he was spot on because I didn't believe in him, and I believe in him now. So hats off to him.
Well, that's why you didn't win all your picks. That's why I went 3-1.
We'll discuss that in our Man Up Monday.
I can't believe you're bragging about
hour.
Your
–
I said they were going to cover.
You were likely split this weekend. Happy on Saturday, not so happy on Sunday. But hopefully you're getting your week off right. We'll recap that Falcons loss on the other side of the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.